It is Friday, October 25th. Let's talk PlayStation. Starting off with our PlayStation Plus reminder, your October games are The Last of Us Remastered and MLB The Show 2019. Next month's games should be announced pretty soon, so just keep that in mind. Now, our first news story, if you didn't see, just as a reminder, I did a separate video already, but over the weekend, the first real-life photo of a PS5 dev kit is leaked online. Now, we've seen patent images, we've seen renderings, we've had a Gizmodo article stating that they've seen it before, we have a developer on Twitter who confirmed that this is the design, now we have a real-life photo. This is from YouTuber Zone of Tech, apparently he was provided this photo. We don't have a source, but that's what it looks like. So in all likelihood, this probably is a real-life photo of a PS5 dev kit, but that's really it, and there's not much else to go on other than saying this is a real-life dev kit, probably. But we did a separate video and talked a little bit more at length about how this is not what the retail box is going to look like. So if you didn't see, that's on the channel, like two uploads back from this one. Now, our first news story, though, is about PlayStation Vita. Nothing big. Firmware update 3.73. One of those typical incremental updates for software stability or system performance. Just have to mention it because we don't ever really get to talk about Vita anymore, so this is a good excuse. But now let's get to The Last of Us Part 2. So basically, all this transpired in the last 24 hours. We had Daniel Mott on Twitter stating that something unexpected was going to happen to a Sony title. Then we had Jason Schreier coming in from Kotaku stating that he has sources claiming that The Last of Us Part 2 will be delayed. Then Naughty Dog quickly following up to confirm on the PlayStation blog and via press release, The Last of Us Part 2 has been delayed from February 21st to May 29th. And this is a month after having a huge media blowout event showing us new gameplay, letting journalists play 2 hours of the game, and giving us a release date during the third state of play. So what happened here? Obviously, this is very weird. It's very puzzling. And there's two main ways that we can look at delays. The first being that this is considered bad because there's something might be wrong with the game, or something might have happened during a rocky development cycle or what have you. Or the other angle is that they just need more time to polish the game, which is what Naughty Dog is stating is what's happening here. They just the game is not living up to the Naughty Dog standard, as Neil Druckmann calls it, and they want more time, and that's pretty much it. Now here's the thing, that's probably true. I'm already seeing a lot of people discuss why this is so weird. Yeah, it absolutely is very weird, but the thing is, it's only a delay by 3 months. And realistically, one of those months doesn't even really count because you need a month to actually print the disc. And that's all true. I mean, you need a month to print the disc. So really, they're just asking for 2 more months, which may seem like a lot to you, but you could spend 2 months really doing what he's saying, which is polishing the game. Maybe they're just realizing, oh man, like we're coming up on February quick and there's just a lot more QA that we have to do. This doesn't work, that doesn't work. I mean, the game is playable from start to finish. I can guarantee you that right now. Now, it might not be in a very good state. It may be in a scenario where Naughty Dog just wants to avoid bugs, problems that players could run into. So in all likelihood, that's probably what's going down. Now, I am seeing two main points, though, that keep cropping up a lot. One is maybe that they're going to add the multiplayer factions mode now. No, Naughty Dog made that pretty clear that it became something else. It's going to be announced at a later date. They're not going to add a whole multiplayer mode in 2 months, believe you me. The other one is maybe they want to get away from a crowded first half of 2020, which includes Cyberpunk, Final Fantasy VII Remake, and a few other titles. The thing about that is Last of Us Part II is a big enough game to where it's the same caliber or even higher of those titles, depending on how you see it. Sony can release this game any day of the year, and it's going to do just fine. So that doesn't really work either. Now, it's obviously not a bad thing to get away from those games. Anything's really beneficial, but the game is big enough to where it's going to release on any day, and it's going to sell very well. But that's a good segue, actually, into our next news story, dialing back to the Jason Schreier Kotaku article, because remember, that was previously a rumor and then confirmed hours later, telling us that Jason's sources were good. And they usually are. Jason has good connections in the industry. But in that article, when he claimed that The Last of Us Part 2 would get delayed, the secondary portion of that, which he confirmed on Twitter, is that internally, because we never got a public date for Ghost of Tsushima, but internally, that title has moved to the later half of 2020. So I guess previously, it was slated to come in the first half as well, which surprised me, because I always pegged Ghost of Tsushima to be a fall or winter 2020 title. But now that might actually be the case, because The Last of Us Part 2 has been moved to around the same area where Ghost of Tsushima might have been released. And jumping off that point, Jason also states, because I know this comes up so often, especially with Ghost of Tsushima, and it gets annoying, but he claims that no, these games aren't just going to get randomly turned into PS5 titles, which, keep in mind, we don't even really know what Sony's going to do with these games when it comes to the cross-generational portion of PS4 to PS5, because a lot of these, it's a situation where they could even offer patches for these PS4 games to just be PS5 enhanced. That's a situation where I'd be interested to see how the PR handles that, because what are the box art for these games going to look like if that is the case? or will they just go full-blown separate $60 title, which is also very likely because they're a publisher and they want to make money, and you know, third-party publishers could do that too, so we really don't know how that's going to look like just yet. But he's basically saying that these aren't going to be exclusive PS5 games, obviously. But as mentioned, Jason's story about Last of Us Part 2 being delayed was correct, but the second part that we're talking about right now, still technically considered a rumor. Just take it for what it is based on the fact that he did get the first part correct. Now, if you didn't see, WWE 2K20 recently came out with a myriad amount of substantial issues, which are absolutely hilarious, and I'm having a fantastic time on Twitter looking at these. But what's notable here is that if you bought the game on PlayStation 4 via the PlayStation Store, usually Sony's pretty tough to get refunds out of if you started the game. That was a stipulation that they noted not long ago, that if you buy something from the store, don't start it if you plan on getting a refund. Sony can check that you've started the software. But because of the case of this game, I guess people are successfully getting refunds out of this. So this is one of those outliers where if there's a major problem with the game, to which this one has quite a few, you are eligible for a very easy and very quick refund through the PlayStation support chat. So if you are in the scenario where you're kind of fed up with the issues of the game, you can do this. So if you didn't think Sony was getting serious with PlayStation Now with that recent price drop or the new commercial, how about this? They recently ran a banner ad across the stadium of a recent football game. I believe it was over the weekend, or maybe it was just a few days ago, I'm not entirely sure, but this is a big deal, especially for football. You know, out in Europe, most countries, Sony has like a 70% lead with PlayStation 4 to their most, you know, their closest competitor, which is Microsoft's Xbox One, a comparable console. They're, you know, they're outselling them like 3-1 most weeks. I mean, it's pretty substantial. So this, I think, is actually, this makes a larger statement, I think, than the recent commercial. Obviously, the price drop's the biggest one, but yeah, I mean, Sony really putting it out there, just getting it in people's minds right now as all these other streaming services finally come to market, even though they're in their infancy. So the early access with Stadia, and then the private little, not even, well, semi-invite-only private beta that Microsoft's finally running with xCloud, the open preview, I guess they're calling it. But Sony's definitely getting serious about PlayStation Now. But on the flip side of that, for our next news story, they're not getting very serious with PlayStation View, their TV streaming service. We haven't talked about this in quite a while, probably because Sony's pretty quiet on the fact that it's not really doing all that well. Reportedly, Sony's looking for a buyer to sell off their subscriber base, which is about 500,000 that is being reported. Now, we don't actually know if that's 100% true because this isn't public data as far as I know. Otherwise, Sony would disclose these numbers during earnings calls and things like that. But 500,000 subscribers, all the content, whatever deals they have in place. I think there was a deal they just recently did with Disney about a month ago for content on PlayStation View, which I don't think we talked about on here. I don't remember bringing that up. But considered a rumor. Apparently, Sony's looking at a number of buyers. They partner with Merrill Lynch to try and find a buyer. I guess one service, Fubo TV, approached them or something. I don't know what's getting worked out there. But basically, whatever they're doing with PlayStation View, not really working out all that well. The TV streaming service is really tough from what I gather. Obviously, you're working with networks. It's so many different contracts and trying to get content onto the service. And then PlayStation View in the past 3 years has had a price increase like 3 or 4 times, which isn't making it as favorable anymore compared to other TV services. And I actually use Sling TV because that's like $25 a month and I get what I want out of it. And then when I looked at PlayStation View, it was like $55 something a month and I didn't get channels I wanted. So this doesn't really surprise me if true. I'd be interested to know how many of you actually, if anybody, uses PlayStation View because it makes it convenient. I don't like having to use Sling because then I got to turn off the PS4 or do something. I like when everything's all in one. That's what I love so much about PlayStation 3 because I could save files on it, then streaming services, then games. But yeah, PlayStation View, not doing all that hot apparently. But moving on, we're coming up on that Death Stranding review embargo. So remember, November 1st, reviews will go live for this game. But because of that, be careful. Apparently, story details are leaking out online. Somebody's let the cat out of the bag. So just be careful. Spoilers are out there. I would even gather that if you ran into them, you wouldn't even know that they're spoilers because the game's just still so weird. But just keep that in mind. Now, another part about Death Stranding, though, is, well, Conan O'Brien's going to be in the game. And this really goes back to what Kojima was saying before, is that there's going to be a lot of cameos in this game. And so now we know Jeff Keighley's in there. Now we know Conan O'Brien's in there. I guess Conan at some point will, and if you don't know, Conan O'Brien's a talk show host in the United States. He will give you this like otter costume that helps you swim or move around better in the water. So I find that pretty funny. There you go. At this point, now the game's going to come out, and I think there's going to be like a running list of the people that they might be considered more not well known, and it'd be pointed out like, oh, this guy was a producer somewhere or this and that. Like I'm actually enjoying how much little Easter eggs this game is more than likely going to have. Now, getting into our PlayStation 5 stuff, we have a new job listing at Sony Interactive Entertainment for a senior cloud engineering manager. And in that job description, it says you will be one of the leaders of an elite team that is super excited to launch the upcoming world's fastest console in 2020. So this was later removed, which is a bit weird because it's like, it's not all that revealing. But if we really stick to the world's fastest console part, I find that, well, it's odd because one, you don't know what Scarlet's doing on paper, Project Scarlet. And then also, how do you quantify world's fastest console? Are we talking boot times, load times? Every single game is different, obviously. So are you doing from boot to start of one neutral title? It just seems a bit weird. It seems like a blanketed statement. But maybe it gives us a better look at how Sony PR will be marketing this console, because that's the thing. I mean, obviously, you're going to put this thing out there, and something's got to stick when it comes to showing this thing off during commercials and things like that, YouTube ads. I mean, there's got to be a label to it, and so maybe that's what Sony's going to roll with, assuming that it even is the world's fastest console. But I don't think you can really make that claim until you see what your competition is doing now. They've both got SSDs. They're very similar parts. Just depends on what they end up buying and putting into this thing for their margins, which in all likelihood, they're probably both going to lose money. So not really a whole lot we can go on, but maybe that's a little sneak peek in terms of how Sony's going to be handling the wording of showing off this thing. But now getting to our more juicy PlayStation 5 news, it looks like we might have, with a reasonable amount of certainty, of the clock speed of the CPU and the GPU that will be in PlayStation 5. Now, here's the thing. Between me and Digital Foundry, there's not really a whole lot of places that have really been covering this saga. And this saga being, if you've been watching this channel for a while, you know we've been discussing these rumors regarding AMD product codes and trying to decipher them. And we've got these Twitter accounts like Tom Apisak, which are also trying to decode these product codes and figuring out what they mean. We had some code names, so Prospero, Oberon, Gonzala. We kind of surmise that that's from the Shakespearean play, The Tempest, and that all those things kind of have underlying meanings of what PlayStation 5 will potentially do. But so during EGX 2019, Digital Foundry held a presentation more or less saying that their sources are really confirming what we've been figuring out and even liking it to, you know, having to do a lot of mystery research to figure out what's going on. So kudos to them. They do have sources saying that Prospero was the correct code name for PlayStation 5, which we never really went through a phase of using the code name frequently. I remember with PS4, we called that thing Orbis for quite a good amount of time up until Sony said it's PS4. And well, Sony called this thing PS5 pretty soon, actually. So we never really got the chance to even call it Prospero, but they're saying the codename was Prospero, and that the CPU will be 3.2 gigahertz at 8 cores, mind you. So that's very impressive, first off. The GPU would be at apparently 2 gigahertz, which is also very impressive. But again, you've got three breakdowns here, and the three breakdowns would be for backwards compatibility to support previous PlayStation 4 software at the base level or PlayStation 4 Pro level. So at PS5 software, you'd have the GPU at 2 gigahertz. Then at PS4 Pro, you'd have it at 911 megahertz, and then base PS4 software would be 800 megahertz. So basically, that's what we're looking at right now. I know this is a lot of technical stuff, and even I myself am not super well-versed in discussing this stuff. So, but it's definitely impressive, and the thing is, it's very comparable to some high-end cards, well, really the highest-end cards that are available right now, but it's not to the point of, like, it wouldn't quite be to an RTX 2080, probably closer to a 270. I mean, there's still a bit of give here. It's very discretionary. Obviously, there's a lot of optimizations going on and things like that. And the GPU at 2 gigahertz, I mean, impressive, no doubt. I'm more concerned at this point with cooling this machine. I mean, this thing's going to get hot. And Sony's had a pretty good track record with their hardware engineering team, so I would imagine that this thing will not, well, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, their consoles always tend to be on the reliable side, but at the same time, the first run of Sony units the last few years have always run very loud. And you wait for those second, third revisions, and then that obvious slim model that comes down the road, you know, 3 years into the life cycle where they get power consumption down, they get more efficient cooling. And so I think we might run into a scenario where this thing will be very loud and will be very hot. You would hope that they figure out a good way to cool the machine. Now, again, when it comes to that PS5 dev kit design, the furthest I will really go in terms of saying it might look like a consumer box is that overly designed U fan shape. I mean, Obviously, that's overly engineered, I think, for a reason, and that might be a design characteristic that carries over. I don't think it would be nearly as prominent, but maybe that is some sort of efficient cooling factor that Sony figured out for this hardware. And it would be a lot more of a sleeker profile, so, like, obviously, you can't tell by the picture, but that fan looks like it's almost an inch off of, like, the normal top portion of the box, and then that U centers, like, just all that empty space. Like, I don't think it would be nearly as dramatic looking, you know what I mean? I think it would look much more sleek, and it would be more of, I don't know, almost like a little bump in the hardware design, you know what I mean? But that at this point, we're getting so far off from the main conversation at hand. The point is, Digital Foundry, at the very least, has done their due diligence. They say they have sources. They say that they're 99% confident that this is the silicon in PlayStation 5. So there you go. If this is where we're at right now, this thing's going to be very impressive. Without a doubt, it's going to deliver crazy performance. And there's still a lot more unknowns in terms of what else is on the die. So as of right now, we've got a good idea of the leap we can expect from base PS4 and PS4 Pro, and it is looking very good. But again, the SSD is what really makes this thing, and it's going to make Scarlet, and it's what's going to catapult both of these machines into a different landscape that truly feels like a next generation jump. Next up, we've got Sony Bend. It looks like they are, in fact, starting pre-production of their next project. If you remember when Days Gone came out, and even a little bit before then, there was a pretty good discussion about if Sony Bend might be on the chopping block if this game doesn't perform. And then the game comes out, gets good reviews, not fantastic reviews, but that still caused more concern for people. Well, anyway, obviously the game sold very well, and surely it turned a profit. So if you had any doubt in your mind, the company is starting a new project, as evident by the LinkedIn profile of Jeremy Vickery. Says he led on Days Gone and now working on a pre-production project at the company. So that's good. It looks like at the very least they're going to get a shot at making something. Obviously, Sony could still come in at any point and, you know, turn off all the lights and say you're done. I think they're definitely going to get another shot at a full-blown game that will actually come out. But this is like such an early thing to talk about now. They're just starting pre-production, so if Sony Bend gets a full-on scale project again that will come out, I mean, we're not going to see this title for probably 3.5 to 4 years minimum. And that's even assuming that they keep a lot of the assets. So let's say it's a sequel to Days Gone, which they have all the assets already built, and they just be creating the new ones that are applicable to the sequel. So, you know, we could see a pretty good turnaround of 3.5, 4 years if they really want to go crazy and possibly a brand new IP or do an entirely different project. Then it would take even longer. If it's of a AAA budget, maybe they'll downscale. Maybe they'll go back to a, you know, smaller scale game, or maybe they'll do VR development. Although I don't think that'll be the case. I think they've kind of proven their chops of doing a AAA budget, even though they didn't get nines and A pluses across the board. So I think we're going to get another pretty big game out of them for sure. Now, speaking of Sony Studios, how about Media Molecule? We got an update from them recently. Now, nothing super specific, but basically Media Molecule is talking about how they will keep supporting Dreams well beyond, and they didn't specifically say PlayStation 5, but more or less implying that we'll be working on this game for so long. We have so much we want to add to it. It could take years and years and years, and we'll keep, you know, pushing the game and making it into what we want. And that's essentially what they're saying, which, I mean, that's what this game needs. This thing clearly has to be a pretty long-term project, and it needs to be monetized to the effect of letting creators sell their content. You need to put this on PlayStation 5 natively and sell it there. I think this game makes a great example of a bigger budget Sony title that could do well on PC. I think this is a scenario where, as much as I love Dreams and I love the creativity of it and I love the tools and I love what Media Molecule is doing, it's still such a niche title that hasn't even, well, and to be fair, it hasn't started its full-blown retail release or marketing push. It's still in early access, but I'm almost frightful that this game will get stuck in a landscape of not really leaving that image, right? Now, they say that there's single-player content coming, that there will be a full-blown release, but, you know, what is that going to look like? I'm almost starting to compare it to PlayStation Home, where it's always in this weird phase of never being out and never having like something you buy at a store and never having commercials and never having this like genuine large scale movement of, hey, Dreams, it's ready, jump in, check out all this single player stuff, check out the community stuff. It almost seems like it's this back burner project, which clearly it's not, but it's not getting a whole lot of attention. And I understand it's early access, but I hope it doesn't fall into that place. And, you know, it's Media Molecule. You know, they're a studio that has proven themselves with Little Big Planet, but at the same time, they really haven't done much else beyond Little Big Planet and Tearaway. We know that they can create these very beautiful, artistically approached games that are polished, no doubt. I mean, they're polished, finished games that look good, play good, have this wide reach of creativity. But Dreams is this third project, which is, it seems so big to where, is it something that they bit off more that they can chew? And is it something that they can really market as well as Tearaway and Little Big Planet could? Which, and keep in mind, Tearaway was not really something that had as big of a movement as Little Big Planet did, right? I just don't want Media Molecule to fall in this weird spot where their games don't, well, this game doesn't make sense to a vast majority of gamers, which it already really doesn't, and I don't think it ever will. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. It's just me kind of rambling on at this point, but there is some concern there with Dreams, and that's the thing. I don't want this to be a problem for them. I love Dreams, and I love Media Molecule, but I don't know. That's what I'm thinking right now. Anyway, though, it's time to get to Let's Talk Plus, the weekly Let's Talk PlayStation giveaway, where one of you can win a $10 PSN code, and I'd like to congratulate Chris Fisher. You have won. I'll be contacting you very soon via email or Twitter. If you would like to win a $10 code, follow that link down below to the Gleam website supporting this channel. A number of ways can gain you an entry. The winner will be announced next week. I'm trying to pay for your games. Those are all the news stories I want to talk about you guys from this past week. On Tuesday, we did a pretty good conversation about Sony's smaller exclusives like Concrete Genie, the Medieval remake, Gravity Rush 2. Why does Sony fund all these smaller exclusives, and yet when they come out, they don't really market them? That's the conversation there. Go check that video out. This coming Tuesday, I don't know if what I'm working on right now will be ready in time, and so therefore, I'm not going to tell you, but I can guarantee that something will be there on Tuesday, and that's why you should always be there. So that's it, though. That concludes this week's episode of Let's Talk PlayStation. I'm Ryan Benecke. Thank you all so much for talking with me, and I will see you all next Friday.